Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Now, there may be a chance that GW was blacked out locally,
How could that be? This is a tournament. You wouldn't do that.
I guess you wouldn't.
And yeah, the tournament's here.
They're playing at Capitol.
The tournament's here.
Is it possible you screwed something up?
No. Or is that possible? It said listening.
Cool. Get real,
and
Gary.
I said Atlantic 10 basketball tournament, and then I said GW basketball. Then I said George Washington, and I couldn't.
Did you try saying representative?
I didn't do that.
Zero.
Or basketball.
Zero. Zero. Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
It wasn't on. The tournament wasn't on. The GW game just wasn't on.
So you missed it.
It wasn't that I couldn't find it. It wasn't on.
Blacked out.
Okay. We're at Chatter. We are live serving breakfast. We have a big crowd here today.
Nice Friday crowd.
We're serving breakfast starting 7 o'clock in the morning on Monday through Friday. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Jennifer Street Northwest in Friendship Heights, inside the line, in the capital of the United States of America. Gary Braun is here. Barry Zwerluga back from Korea is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel's going to run the board and do the news. Josh Maurer, the original intern at the PTI show, is here. He's in town because of the Atlantic 10 tournament. He broadcasts University of Massachusetts basketball games. They won one and lost one. They're out now. Unlikely to be in the NCAA unless something very strange happens. Speaking of the NCAA, we will do a selection show on Sunday night featuring Gary Williams, Gary Braun, Michael Wilbon. Who else?
Lou Alcindor?
No, not Lou Alcindor. Kevin Sheehan. Kevin Sheehan. Not Kip Schmeeman.
Yes.
Kevin Sheehan. Others will wander in.
Yes.
We're going to start at 7 o'clock, but now I hear Barry just said to me that the TNT show
unconscionable
is going to go from 6 to 8?
6 to 8. And, I mean, and this is
what is that?
Crazy. They are going to announce the entire field first before they do the matchups.
Taking
it's
out
ridiculous.
All the drama. You take out the greatest thing about that show is when you see the kids from, say, Syracuse.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't get in on the last number 13.
Right.
They didn't get. That's the drama. Or the kids that do get in.
Yes.
That is leaving us. But we're going to be on, sponsored by Spotify, and now you can stream our podcast and several others like it on Spotify. Open the app on your mobile device or desktop, click on the Browse channel, then click on the podcast section. Start streaming today to stay up to date on the NCAA tournament's latest news on Spotify. So I first learned that it's not a CBS show anymore. It's Turner Show now.
Correct.
Which I didn't know.
The tournament. Yeah, a bunch of the games have been there for.
I didn't know the selection show.
Oh, right.
I thought selection show was still a CBS show.
Wasn't the national championship game on TBS last year? Am I wrong about that?
I would think you're wrong on that. I don't think they put the national championship game on.
I'm still looking for the GW game at
that
point.
That wasn't on. Anyway, lots to talk about
there.
Today.
I wouldn't know.
We got a letter from Dan Franknecht. A little since the podcast
that
days.
Dan Franknecht?
That from Erie, Pennsylvania. Erie, Pennsylvania, the home of
the O'Neaters.
In the greatest rock and roll movie ever done, That Thing You Do. And he says, Dr. Hoff Waff, find enclosed a few complimentary tickets to the Erie Tailgate. The Tailgate is a tailgate theme party before an Erie Seawolves minor league baseball game to raise money for charities in Erie, Pennsylvania. The ticket includes beer, barbecue from the Q Abides, yard games such as cornhole and giant jingle, and an opportunity to spend the afternoon in the bustling metropolis of Erie, Pennsylvania. I specifically reserved ticket numbers 222 and 234 for you. If you're unavailable, those are good numbers, 222, 234, very good numbers. If you're unavailable on June 9th, a couple of signed tickets would be just as good for our Chinese auction. A little bit of the Tony Kornheiser show or chatter swag wouldn't hurt either. So we are sending those back. He'll be graduating.
Chinese auction? Anyone familiar with that?
I don't know what that means. I hope it's not something bad that all of a sudden it'll be on the internet that I said something terrible.
Tony said Chinese auction.
I'll be graduating with my doctorate of physical therapy on May 5th, so feel free to reach out with any more yoga-related injuries. And that is, my leg still hurts. So
National championship game on TBS, by the way.
Last year or this year?
This year for sure. This year for sure.
Right. Am I crazy? Is that not a basic cable channel?
That's a basic cable channel, yes.
I'm very surprised that they would take a national game where ratings are important and disenfranchise maybe 10 or 20% of the viewing public who does not get basic cable.
I'm very surprised.
Is the number that high?
A little bit of
I don't know.
It may show a little bit of the status, maybe falling status of the national title game.
Tony, Chinese auction, according to Wikipedia, is a combination of a raffle and an auction, typically featured at a charity, church festival, and numerous other events.
So it's not bad. Also, we don't have also to ask sometimes known why as, it has.
As a penny social, penny sale, tricky tray, or pick-up prize, according to local customs.
Okay, well, I'm
or to
for
avoid
nine.
Causing
I'm
offense.
Nine on those. Let's start with the basketball. The teams that figured to be seated in the top 10 that we're almost sure of, except for one, except for North Carolina, but if they get to the even the semis of the ACC tournament,
which they're in.
They'll do. Are they in already?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. They play Duke, right?
UVA, yes. Xavier, Kansas all win comfortably in the morning. Duke, UNC, Villanova all win comfortably in the evening. Duke in particular, Marvin Bagley III had 33 points, and Grayson Allen shot 7 for 10 and had 23 points. And I'll ask Barry this as a Duke. If they do that, they win.
To me, if
they win.
Allen is a player and not a black hole, then that's the difference. Because I think Bagley at this point, you're going to get what you get from him. He is a great player. Allen is the variable there to me.
They are the winner. If that happens.
I agree.
Right? If that happens, that doesn't always happen.
It doesn't mean it'll happen, but,
no, doesn't.
But they can do that.
Last week, the University of Virginia needed to score 5 points in less than the final second, which they did to beat Louisville. So the game was trumped up as Louisville's revenge, and that lasted about halfway through the first half.
Right.
And
right.
then Virginia took over.
Virginia's
Louisville would
good.
Come back. But Virginia would say, okay, that's nice. You're nice. Go away now. And they would reestablish their lead. Virginia is a very good team. We all, and Josh would know this because Josh watches so much tape of so many schools. We all look at Virginia and we say, what can kill Virginia? It's the same answer all the time.
Awesome.
Down
Always.
15 yeah. in the second half.
No chance.
That's it. They have no. But they don't go down 15 in the second half. They don't. And by the way, 38 in the first half and 75 in the game against a very good defensive
yeah.
team ought to be enough offense in any game in the tournament, right?
For that team. Yeah, absolutely. And they, you know, they're fascinating because you know who they are. You know how their identity is Tony Bennett and that pack line defense. And I think they get into trouble not only when they're down 15, Tony, like that's impossible for them. But
yes.
their fans aren't comfortable even up 12 or 14 because you know they can give up. They're susceptible to the run too.
Yeah.
The nature of the way they
I
play.
I have said this before. They play basketball like soccer. They pass it
yep.
and they pass it and they pass it and they wait for the better shot. But they're pretty good if they take the early shot. They just don't do it.
Correct.
I think they can this year.
And Kyle Guy is a really good player. He's a good offensive player. I like them a lot.
We root for them?
I kind of do. I mean, I went to their game.
Wilbon roots for them.
He's related by marriage,
yes,
right?
Yes, his wife.
I went
TV.
To their game
Cheryl
at Cameron.
But Cheryl also went to Duke Law School.
Right, so she can win either way, right?
Right.
But it's my feeling that there's no team in any place that they can't beat. That doesn't mean they're going to win the national title, but they can beat anybody in the field.
As can Villanova.
Absolutely.
Ask can Villanova. Ask can Kansas.
Sure.
You know, there's five or six
teams. I'm not
teams.
A huge Kansas fan.
Villanova can beat anybody.
There's
they're
no question.
That good, and they're that smart on the court, and they, you know, and they know
and
what they're doing.
And they've been deep Spirits. In the tournament and
yeah.
all that stuff.
Yeah, but they only
even
have
at 29
guys.
And 2, though, it's very hard for me to envision Virginia making that run. There's just too many games played at 59, 56, 63, 61. It's just like you...
They win almost all of them.
I know, they do. They do.
They win almost all of them.
And it's funny, you know, this Virginia team was not supposed to be the Virginia team that is number one going into the tournament and is we're talking about, it's having a long run. They not only lost their kind of glue point guard in London Perantes from last year, who was, you know, one of those four-year guys that ends up with, you know, 1,800 points and a bazillion assists.
Sort of like Grievous Vasquez was at Maryland.
Yeah, yeah,
that
one of those
player.
Guys, you're like,
yeah.
oh my gosh, he's still here.
Yeah, yeah.
He's gone. They had a couple of transfers, and this was not supposed to be the year. I think Bennett, he's a remarkable coach. He really is.
So I guess I've told this story.
Do you want to guess? I'm sorry. Do you want to guess? I'm just looking at their stats, where they rank in scoring. I mean, they average 67 a game, which is a little more than I would have guessed. 315th in Division I.
That's amazing.
That can't be. We didn't. They're ahead of Binghamton. I guarantee you they're ahead of
Binghamton. Points per game, 67.3.
351 schools.
13th in the ACC.
Wow.
13th in a 15-team conference.
3-15 well, individual. Okay, now, okay. Now, opponent points per game is at 52.8 is first in both.
Right, 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 right.
So it's, but that's it's, astonishing.
It's how they
well,
choose to play.
Well, a lot of that is right. a function of not shooting that often.
Right.
They limit possession.
They bleed the clock.
They limit possessions.
All right, so we cannot do the opening segment without the news of the President of the United States has agreed to meet face-to-face with Kim Jong-un. And we ask ourselves, how do we think that will go? If you watch television, everybody is very skeptical about this. I'm not particularly skeptical about this. So I think it'll be fun. Because I think at the end of it,
fun is the operative word. That's what jumped to my mind.
Kim Jong-un walks away with the two things he wants the most. Kansas City, the entire city, and a beer distributorship in the upper Midwest. Because I think, who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want that? Is it unbelievable? He's actually a killer. He's actually a thug, rogue dictator who didn't he kill his own uncle?
That's the story.
Not that a lot of us wouldn't want to do that, but we don't. We actually don't.
I don't think my uncle.
We legitimize him. Maybe. I'm sure that Trump thinks he's going to wheel and deal.
I got this.
And he's going to say and so. And Kim Jong-un will agree to everything. But agreeing to everything isn't the same as. Doing anything.
Well, what's surprising to me is how this is being reported as if it's going to happen.
Which it may not.
Let's wait a few minutes until he tweets out that he decided he's not doing
not
it, which is totally, totally feasible to me.
But it's an amazing, if this is now the go-to move, if you want to get rid of the other headlines, the Stormy Daniels headlines,
right.
Make
a new one.
People in your own party upset at the tariffs that you're imposing, totally chaotically out of the blue to most of those
people. Because you're upset about other things.
So here's how you do it. You go, hey, I've got an idea. Let's meet with the Rocket Man.
Hey, look over
Let's
there.
Let's do it.
Look over there.
Let's just do it.
So
and it blew up.
I'm not going to profess to be some sort of Korea expert because I spent 3 weeks
there. I was going to ask you, do you know him personally?
I did,
or his sister?
I'm not at liberty to disclose that. I did... wander up to the DMZ while I was there and peered into North Korea. And
how did it look to you?
Not so bad.
It looked a little desolate.
Could you do a column in a sidebar?
I mean,
I just landed at the airport. I'll have a column for you in, about an hour.
So
the mood of North Korea.
Right. I was plugged in.
Yeah.
But they do, the South Koreans who lead these tours, and I took a bus from Seoul, there's as much propaganda on the South Korean side about... Look at how miserable things are, and they have
and look
you,
at how good they are here.
Exactly, and they have you peer over the river, and they provide binoculars and all that kind of stuff. And they look at this is a town, and there's a farmer, and
collection
that person,
of actors.
That person, yep. it
all
felt
actors.
Like a Disney thing. Yeah. It was very, very unsettling.
Have you? I don't do the internet very well. I don't know really how to do it, but it's
the
been
internet.
Shown to me that there's a way to. At night,
yeah,
you
yeah,
look
that.
At all the cities in the United States of America, for example, and there's lights everywhere. You look at the entirety of North Korea,
nothing.
And there's a candle.
There's a candle,
yes.
Right.
There's one guy holding a candle going from house to house.
Right.
Selling, shoes, whatever.
Right. So very environmentally conscious.
Now, this comes from Funny or Die, so I'm not sure if it's accurate, although the document does say, from the Office of the President, some of the requests for this meeting include 500 Diet Cokes, crayons for when I'm bored, one spare shoe that I can throw if I get mad, for the Spice Girls to become one to be playing in the background, and for three people to yell out, "We love Cole" at random times.
So there you go.
Be true.
So there you go. Let's get out of here. When we come back, Ian Hornaday is going to review a couple of movies and hopefully explain why the Oscars got a very bad rating, right?
Yes.
They were down about 7 or 8 million viewers or something like that. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Squarespace ad. Those of you who listen to the show... No, I know nothing about the internet. Zero. I don't subscribe even to the Facebook. But things you can do with the Squarespace are create a beautiful website to turn your cool idea into a new website, to showcase your work, to blog or publish content, to sell products and services of all kinds, to promote your physical or online business, to announce an upcoming event or special project, and more. Squarespace does this by giving you, and here's where we get into language that I don't understand, beautiful templates created by world-class designers. Powerful e-commerce functionality lets you sell anything online. The ability to customize look and feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks. Everything optimized for mobile right out of the box. You go in mobile. A new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions, including hair. analytics that help you grow in real time, built-in search engine optimization, free and secure hosting, nothing to patch or upgrade ever, 24/7 award-winning customer support. We're encouraging folks to make it yourself. Easily create a website by yourself. Make it stand out with a beautiful website. Michael, this is our website.
Yes, indeed.
Right? What is our website called?
TonyCornizershow.com. Squarespace is not our website.
Oh.
They host and help us create our website.
You're going down a hole that you can't get out of, I think.
Well, let me get out. The future is coming. Make it brighter with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you are ready to launch, and we don't mean that in the Kim Jong-un way. We don't. When you're ready to launch, use the promo code Tony to save 10% off your first purchase of a website domain.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I love this.
It's good, isn't it?
These are the new chums out of Phoenix. The song is called Come On, Come On.
We played them before. We may have
played this song before.
Yeah, it's a very nice song.
This is really good.
Seth Boyack, I believe, of the New Chums, sent this in to us.
Lovely. Ann Hornaday joins us now. Ann has a couple of movies, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Oscars. The first movie is called A Wrinkle in Time. I'm told that this was a very important book and a large-selling book, and people have waited for years for this movie. It doesn't look like anything that I would ever see. So I paid no attention to it. And in fact, it's fair to say that over the last 20 years of my life, I've really paid no attention to anything except myself and my ability, I hope, to get into the Club of Cella next Thursday. How is A Wrinkle in Time?
You know, it's good. It's not great. And I think it's been victim to, you know, a hype campaign that has not done it any favors, because at the end of the day, it's a perfectly good movie. It's a kid's movie. I mean, I think it kind of reminded me, the reaction to it reminded me of the all-female Ghostbusters a few years ago.
Yes.
That had been so worked over by the time it got to the screen. It had this backlash from the fanboys, and then it had defenders who hadn't even seen, nobody had seen it yet, and it was all this, you know, all this sound and fury and strutting and fretting. And then what we got was a really fun family movie, you know, that really wasn't out to do anything more than just entertain us. And I kind of feel the same is true of this. Full disclosure, I'm not a Wrinkle in Time fan. I'm not one of those lifelong fans. So I don't know how the rabid fan base of the book is going to react to the film. I know it condensed some things out and it's switched a few things around. I found the actual story and storytelling to be rather incoherent. And in a recent review of the book, the great Michael Dirda, wrote for us and said the same was true of the book. He found it to be really jumpy and illogical and, you know, kind of incoherent. So I feel like the weaknesses of the book have been brought along. But it's beautiful to look at. The actors, Ava DuVernay, the director, found some wonderful kid actors to play the lead.
Was she the director of Mudbound? Right? She's the director of Mudbound?
Oh, no. No. Ava DuVernay did Selma.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
She did Selma in a wonderful film called Middle of Nowhere, mm-hmm. with David Oyelowo. But she's done a really interesting, she looked for some really good child actors and found them. And then, of course, we have Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, and Oprah Winfrey as these three queen-like figures who help guide these kids through the universe, and they are just sort of decked out in these progressively more fantastic costumes and gowns and wigs and makeup, and so it's fun to watch, you know, and it goes by very quickly, and I think that for young people, you know, to me the sweet spot is really 12 and under for this one.
Okay.
And if you're accompanying you're a young person to the theater, you'll be diverted. You know, it's not. You know, some people have been saying, oh, is this the next thing after Black Panther? And it's like, it's not even in the same league. You know, it's not the same audience. It's not the same. It doesn't aspire to the same things. It does what it does, and it does it well.
I'm just going to interrupt you to say that the socialite just walked in.
And the
socialite and his wife just walked
in. Yes, accompanied by a retinue.
Really? I always like to say that. Now, what were you saying, Ann? I need to do that. He's an owner. I need to suck up to him. All right, there's another movie here called Submission with Stanley Tucci.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying that out loud, called Submission with Stanley Tucci, makes me nervous about what this movie might be about. I like Stanley Tucci.
Who doesn't?
I think he's really good. I don't know that he carries movies by himself, but I like him very much.
What if I can jump in? Anne actually has a. You saw him very early in his career on stage, right?
I like to take credit. Yes, I like to take credit for Stanley Tucci's entire
really?
Career.
Discovered him.
That's
really?
Not true. I saw him. I have a couple of stories like this where I saw an actor at the beginning of their careers on stage first.
Yeah.
And he's one of them. He was in this little teensy-weensy off Broadway production of a Molière play called Scapin. It was kind of a musical
adaptation. I know Scapin. Well, yeah, we did it in college.
It's part of the repertory. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
It's that kind of film.
Yeah.
And so it was directed by this guy named Andre Belgrotter, who theater buffs will know that name. I mean, he was a legend and taught at Yale. And Stanley Tucci played Scapino. It was the it was a musical adaptation of the play. And this guy comes out on stage, and I've never seen anything like it. He was a dervish. He was absolutely, it was the greatest, one of the greatest physical performances I've ever seen. And his voice was going up and down, and he was just, I couldn't believe it. And I called, I was freelancing at the time, and I called my editor at New York Magazine, because I used to do stuff for the front of the book for them. And I said, I just saw somebody who blew my mind. Can I write about him? And he said, sure. So I called up Stanley Tucci and took him to coffee and did a little profile of him because I just thought he was so gifted. And by that time, I think he was already getting movie work and stuff. So it wasn't like, I mean, he was already discovered. He was on his way. But it's just fun to be, it's fun to sort of feel like you've been there from the beginning with someone, you know?
Yeah, I seem to recall 4 or 5 years ago walking in New York City and thinking that Stanley Tucci and Edie Falco were in a play together.
I bet they were.
Yeah.
I bet they were.
And two very good notices, but a limited engagement. Ron, I think he's really good. How is this movie?
Okay, this movie, you know, the movie's okay. The
movie
is
so great if you said this movie
professor.
Rots. It stinks like from the head.
I wish I could say it right, but it's interesting. It's a college campus drama about a college professor, that's Stanley, and a student, and the kind of mutually transactional relationship that they enter, and it's very redolent of other films. I mean, there were points where I thought of Wonder Boys very fondly because I love that movie, mm-hmm. Wonder Boys. There were times it reminded me of that David Mamet play, Oleana, about
that
sexual
David
harasssment.
Mamet. Fantastic, David Mamet.
You know, and it kind of makes you feel like, oh, this has been done, but kind of better by other people. But he's always great. And this young woman, Addison Timlin, who probably has my very favorite name of the year, Addison Timlin.
Nice name.
She does a very good job as the student, and we have Kira Sedgwick that we don't see enough at all who plays his wife. So, I mean, there are lots of, it's a very attractive production.
What college is it? Is it Binghamton?
No, as a matter of fact, it's an unnamed college. No, it is named. It's called Faber College. It's fictional, but it's in
Faber
Vermont.
Faber College.
And
knowledge
I was
is
trying
good.
To figure out where they filmed it. There were moments where I thought, that's Smith, but it wasn't Smith.
Mm.
But it made me dream of Smith. Anyway, so yeah, I gave it it's a solid 2-star movie.
2 stars stinks.
No, it doesn't.
Out of 4? Come on.
It's out of 12.
2 stars is there's something to value. Look, here's my system.
All right.
If you get any kind of star from me, it means there's something to value in your movie. It's all the real stinkers get nothing. They get nothing from me.
All right. Let me move on to something. Oscar ratings.
Before you get that, Edie Falco and Stanley Tucci were on Broadway together back in 2002.
Oh, it's that long ago.
Yes,
okay.
A revival of Frankie and Johnny and the Clair de Lune.
Yeah.
There you go.
I remember this.
Whoa,
I remember walking by.
A dream team.
The Oscar ratings, they sank. Why?
Yes, they did.
Why? What are your theories? Because I have a theory, but you go ahead with your theory.
Well, for one thing, attendance was kind of down anyway. So I kind of feel like it was a reflection of just a general people not being into the movies at all. And then other than Get Out, really, I mean, Get Out was probably the highest box office performer mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. group. Mm-hmm. Who else? I mean, I don't have the stats in front of
probably
me.
Probably Dunkirk.
Dunkirk, thank you. Dunkirk and Get Out were really the most commercially kind of... And I don't think Dunkirk, even though I loved it, I know Nigel loved it, and a lot of people loved it because they went to it, but I don't think it really got that emotional, like, oh, let's see how Dunkirk does. You know, like it didn't inspire that kind of emotional allegiance, you know, that a Titanic or a Dark Knight would have. And Wonder Woman was completely skunked. And
yes.
I think that if they had had Wonder Woman in the mix, I think that would have ginned up a little bit more interest. So I do think it kind of reflects a general, and look, you know what? Nigel and I were talking about this the other day. I wasn't really that emotionally invested in this year's Oscars either. I mean, I was kind of looking at it with a little bit more distance, but there wasn't any one movie that I just thought I was going to... I mean, I was very sad Mudbound didn't make it up. I mean, if Mudbound had been up, I would have been really excited.
So this is interesting to me. It's interesting to me because...
It didn't really grab my... I wasn't that emotionally into it.
You gave a movie answer. I would have given a different answer.
Okay.
I would have given a politics and culture answer. Mm-hmm. And I would have said that maybe the sort of general public out there that was not completely affiliated with the movies this year said, mm-hmm. I don't want to be lectured. Yes. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know who's going to win, but I've been lectured lately, and I don't know that I want to be lectured. Do you think there's anything to that?
Maybe, but ironically, they were lecturing themselves. I mean, if anything, it was really Hollywood kind of looking inward and criticizing itself.
Well, I don't know that Hollywood understands its television audience. I don't know that they do.
That's probably a very, very cogent point, what you just made. That's a really, I think we can all sit with that for a little bit. Hollywood doesn't understand the television audience.
Yeah.
Hey, you just launched 1,000 think pieces. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the best I can do because I can't think for myself.
No second paragraph.
Can you tell me?
You're good, Kornheiser.
Can you tell me, I know you wrote about this, can you tell me, the star of all the awards this year is Frances McDormand. She had the single greatest line, we're not here for the food, at the Golden Globes. But then she has the inclusion rider phrase. I know CC Rider. I don't know inclusion rider. Do you?
J.R. Rider.
Yeah, J.R. Rider, I know too. Is there something you can tell us about that that explains what inclusion rider means?
Why, yes, Tony. Yes. As a matter of fact, I have a column about it in today's Washington Post. Yes, that's the Washington Post with Ann Hornaday weighing in on this week's catchphrase. Anyway, I did write about it. And you know, what it is it's a call to people with power, and those are usually movie stars, right? Like stars, name directors, people who have leverage, who can negotiate things into their contract to say, hey, I want it to look like this. You know, I want you to make good faith efforts to hire an inclusive crew and an inclusive cast on this project, especially in supporting roles that are ethnically neutral. Let's widen the net a little bit and show me that you've made good faith efforts in this direction. And it's something that people with power can ask for and leverage. And so I think it's a really interesting concept. Michael B. Jordan, the actor in Black Panther, already announced that his production company was going to adopt it, Brie Larson. It already got pushback from the old guard. But we've already seen it in action, like Mudbound is a really good example. Dee Reese had a very inclusive crew on that movie. And P.S., not on the basis of their identity, but on the basis of their talent, to the point where Rachel Morrison, the cinematographer, got nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
So arguments about, like, oh, this is a quota system or this is going to, you know, dilute excellence. No. This is actually letting you be more excellent because you're not limiting yourself to this crazy little nepotistic club. And I think Ava did it, too, with Wrinkle in Time. That's a very inclusive cast and crew. So we see that it can work, and it'll be interesting to see if people adopt it.
I love Frances McDormand. I do. I mean,
right? I mean,
I
she's every time she says, I have a few things I want to say, I just like a little hair goes up on the back of my neck.
There are other people
oh
that
God.
Make those kinds of speeches that annoy me because I think it's
I
all about them.
Right.
And I don't think that about her. So I like
it. I totally agree.
Thank you, Anne. Talk to you soon.
Anne
Hornaday, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with news. Neil Greenberg will join us over the phone with news to destroy the Washington Capitals, right? That was the entire purpose, to destroy the Washington Capitals. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a ZipRecruiter ad. Option number one goes like this. Hiring? Every business needs great people and a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive, so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, my listeners can recruit. They can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, fee. So, but you'd probably have to have a business. Like, Gary, you have a business.
You I would need to recruit somebody.
Like, I don't have a business.
Well, you do.
Well, I have this business.
Yes.
I can't even get into Club Acela.
Yeah,
I'm not that good. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That is ZipRecruiter, Z-I-P-R-E-C-R-U-I-T-E-R, ZipRecruiter.com/Tony, ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a band called Throwing Plates. They are from the District of Columbia. This is, what is this called? Dirty Lies and Whiskey?
Dirty Lies and Whiskey, yes, that's right.
We like this.
Yeah, we do.
As I say all the time about the music, you hear a snippet of it now, but at the end of the podcast, you hear the entirety of these people's submissions. And Michael, if people want to submit their music for us, how do they do so?
Send in your original music to the show at jingles at tonykornheiser.com.
And while you can get a Chatter t-shirt here at Chatter, for $12, the right price.
Right.
The right price. Though the socialite wanted to jack it up, Nancy agreed that $12 was the right price.
We'll always disagree on that price
point. What if people want to buy our stuff on the website? How do they do so?
Go to shop.tonykornheiser.com, and I have a big announcement. We are going to have a new promo code from our friends at Johnny O.
Oh, good.
So get ready to activate your tweener and live that West Coast prep lifestyle.
Right. Just in time.
I've got some new recommendations. For the spring season.
So we'll do that next week?
That will be released on Monday. Exciting. Or on
social. Okay. So, like, our stuff is nice, but the Johnny O stuff is sufficiently nice.
Just, it fits a different purpose.
We have a $12 line, and we have the Johnny O line.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, Neil Greenberg joins us now. It is my great pleasure to find out that Neil wrote something that essentially said the entire structure of the Capitals' playoff chances is built on a house of lies. That's how it was described to me. Neil, if this is true, just describe some of the lies.
Well, this is a team that's absolutely reeling and just can't seem to get a handle on how to play defense. You look at how they play every night. They give up more chances than they get themselves, especially in the slot or the crease. And that's been a large part of why Holtby has been having a down year. That's a large part why they've been so inconsistent. And if you look at their record, you look at their goal differential and where they are in the standings, and it's all great. But then if you look at some of the underlying metrics and make adjustments for their shot quality and their shot volume, they're actually the second worst team in the league after the Buffalo Sabres, who are
really?
The worst team in the league.
Second worst team in the league?
Yeah, it's something that we haven't seen.
How are they winning then? I mean, they win all the time, don't they?
Well, outscoring opponents.
They win, but they're also playing against a wide range of teams that aren't that great in of itself when they do win. So once you get in the playoffs and the level of competition's higher and you have to go against a team like Tampa Bay, Toronto, Boston, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, I think that this is going to be a real embarrassment. And I think Washington's in trouble.
Is the Holtby stuff serious? Like, they yanked him in three of his last six games. That's rare. Is that serious stuff?
It's a mixture, right? So one, he's overworked. He plays a lot of minutes. He has played a lot of minutes over the past couple years. That's gonna cause some issues. And the defense in front of him is just not good. And I'm not sure what else this team can do, what other lever the team can pull. Because you look at it, Trotz's first year, flame out in the second round. They upgraded the defense, flame out in the second round. The third year, they upgraded the top six, flame out in the second round, and now here you are after a year of turnover, and it's probably the worst year under Barry Trotz. I'm just not sure where else this team can go. I think that they need to make some significant changes in the offseason, and I just think that they're not looking good. There's really no other way to put it. They're just not a fundamentally sound hockey team.
Can I ask a question, Neil? Is this year comparable for Trotz to the other years that he's won the Stanley Cup?
This is actually the worst. This is definitely the worst Caps team in terms of performance since he's been here, and it's gotten worse over the years. The defense is really what's causing the issue, and it's comical in a way because the team will say that they're being more selective of their shots and they're doing a better job of clearing out the crease, but there's literally no evidence to support that, and I've written that before as well. It's just they're relying a lot on luck, and they're relying a lot on the other team losing rather than them being a good team that can win, if that makes sense.
Do you think they should rely more on Ovechkin's sheep? I read that he has sheep at home. Maybe you could put them out on the ice, and that would confuse the other teams.
They can't do any worse than some of the other defensemen we see. I mean, Brooks Orpik is supposed to be their big crease-clear stopper. He allowed a guy to waltz in the crease, get three shots on net, and end up putting a goal in. I don't know. Maybe sacrifice the sheep. Maybe that'll help bring some good. I really don't know. I don't know what else. Like I said, I don't know what other levers there are to push to pull with this team. You got to start to get drastic, I guess.
Are the Wizards?
And I'm not advocating herding a sheep. By the way.
Are the Wizards? No sheep were heard in this podcast. Yeah. Are the Wizards built on a house of lies as well, or are they? This is the local portion of the show today. Are they built on a house of lies, or are they okay?
No, I think that they're okay. Obviously, they need John Wall back. I think the team's better without John Wall is a bunch of hooey.
No, the team's not better without John Wall. Yeah. But when John Wall comes back, he's got to understand that the team played well without him, and he's got to accommodate to that to some degree, does he not?
Without a doubt. And I think his knee issue was pretty evident during the season because he was settling for the pull-up jumper instead of driving and kicking to the basket.
Right.
So I think if he's healthy, they can get back to playing the way that they played. Now, the reason why they're doing well without him is because they've gone back to the way that they've played when he's healthy in terms of being aggressive towards the basket and being able to move the ball around. When he's hurt and he has the ball and he can't really do much with it, he's got to settle for that mid-range jumper, which doesn't help anybody. I think the Wizards will be okay. I'm not saying that they're one of the title contenders, but once they get John Wall back, this team will look good.
I think they should all come out and everybody eats shirts. They should do that. And they should say to John, if you take off those sunglasses, you can read that this says everybody eats. So because I do think he's their best player. But I do think they've got to be cognizant, or he's got to be cognizant, that something has happened here without him that can make them very good if he, you know, runs in that lane.
And you know, quite frankly, Satoransky has really stepped up and proven that he could be a valuable commodity. I think if you take anything out of the injury for John Wall, it's that there, like you said, there are capable players that can step up. And if you can run a deep bench in the playoffs, that's going to give you a huge advantage.
That helps.
So I think that you know, we'll see how Coach Brooks uses them going forward.
Thank you, Neil. This was very, very good. This made me happy. Thank you. Good job, Neil.
You're welcome. I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Nigel, you have news for the rest of us. You have to say goodbye to Neil.
Yeah, wants to say goodbye to Neil.
Say goodbye to Neil.
Get all his ducks in a row in terms of news.
Billy Ray Cyrus and Dan Rather. That's a grouping you don't think is going to happen.
Robert Plant.
Yeah, it really is.
Billy Ray Cyrus and Dan Rather.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Tony, did you get to see Michael Porter Jr. yesterday?
I saw a couple of highlights.
Yeah, that was his long-awaited return, and that is it.
That's it. He's done in college.
Yeah, they lose to Georgia 62-60. He took game-high 17 shots, making only five and just accumulating 12 points. But yeah,
4 months.
To be expected. A bit slow in his return. And we think that's all we'll see of him in the college level, right?
Yes.
You
saw one full game and 2 minutes.
2 minutes. That's enough. That's enough film. Yeah. Serena Williams, we got to see her back again. Won her first match in a comeback. Well, not comeback, really, but after a 14-month layoff after the birth of her first child. This is at Indian Wells at the BNP. Paribus or Paribus? Or do we know?
Doesn't matter.
I think it's Paramus.
Paramus. It's the Paramus Open, yes. She wins 7-5 and 6-3.
She said this nice thing. She felt like she was out there and she said she felt like crying every once in a while. It was just nice.
Probably
it was very
great.
Human.
Yeah.
Very human. Very nice.
The whole
to
thing
see.
Has been very human. Yes. Even her struggles post birth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very nice to see. Very nice to see.
If you were tuning into the Home Run Derby this year to see Aaron Judge, you probably will be disappointed. He said on the Players Tribune podcast the other day that he's one and done with it. And yesterday he reaffirmed that and said, yeah, I'm going to stand by that decision to not take part in
this
year.
Well, there is some thinking that he got a problem with his shoulder that required off-season surgery.
He certainly went a big slump after
that. Well, he did until September. And then he hit 15 home runs in September.
But, you know, I was struck by, first of all, Bryce Harper has sat out the Home Run Derby the last few years. He hasn't done it since, I think, 13 in New York City.
You know what? It's okay to do it once and not do it again.
Well, right.
If you win it.
But Bryce has said he will do it this year because it's in Washington.
Right.
I am struck when I've been to these Home Run Derbies, they're fun. I mean, and so last year, Stanton and Judge and even Justin Bour, these guys are hitting bombs.
Yeah.
And it's I actually was surprised that I had a little bit of like, oh, he's not going to do it? I feel bad about that.
I'm okay that he doesn't.
Yeah,
it doesn't
okay
mean he'll
that.
Not do it ever.
Right.
I'm okay if he doesn't ever do it just because you have that memory of how terrific he was.
Yes.
And he won it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, he won it. You walk. Yes. I mean, that's okay. Larry Bird, when Larry Bird won a three-point shooting contest in a warm-up jersey.
With his crooked finger.
That's,
and the ball was 15 feet from
he
the
knew
hoop.
Was in.
Oh,
he knew it was in. That's
is that,
it.
Is that the one?
What, this is drop the mic moment. What are you doing?
Is that the one before it started? He said, who's coming in second?
Yes. Yes. That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So you can do that.
Yes,
that's
no
okay.
Problem.
People point to the fact that Michael Jordan was in the dunk contest twice. That's nice, but it doesn't have to be.
Right.
Baseball would love to have Aaron Judge in this.
Of course.
But,
yeah.
You know, if I ran the team, I wouldn't love to have Aaron Judge in this.
I was always concerned of a player, if I was a fan of them and a fan of the team that they played on, that they would mess with this hitting stance or the style, and then that would go into some sort of prolonged slump afterwards.
Know, I mean, and not to make this all about Harper, but he has taken batting practice not on the field much more regularly over the last several years than he does on the field, because on the field you get caught up in where did the ball go. You
right.
get caught up in a home run derby mentality.
Sure.
So he likes to see how does it travel, how to and I'm just hitting it into the net. So that's a common thing, too.
I mean, the home run derby thing is that's the best thing of the baseball All-Star game.
Correct.
It really is. It's thrilling.
Oh,
it's thrilling.
It's super
they're
fun.
Killing the ball.
I think it's been improved in recent years with some of the tweaks they've made.
The clock, the head-to-head nature of it has been much better. It's a fun event. And, you know, right here in Washington.
It's why the shooting contest in the NBA All-Star game is so much better than the dunk contest.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Much better. It's much better. What else do you have?
Mr. Tony, I want to tell you the sad story of Sam Ballard, a young rugby player from Sydney. He was in his early 20s at a party in 2010, having drinks with a bunch of his friends, when a slug started to crawl across the table.
Ew.
As might happen in these sort of gatherings with alcohol, somebody said, well, I dare you to eat the slug.
It's 2010. That's a long time ago.
Yes. He did. And that is where the problems began. The slug had a rat lungworm, which you can contract from being next to the rodents. And this has caused him to, it infested his brain, put him into a coma for 420 days, and has left him paralyzed. It's devastated and changed his life forever, changed my life forever, said his mother in 2011. they once
thought. Wait, it's 2018 now.
Yes. He's now a 28-year-old quadriplegic, suffers from seizures, eats and breathes through tubes, and requires constant care.
Oh, dear God.
And I've seen the pictures of him before and after, and it just...
Not that I'm encouraging people to eat slugs, but was this a rare circumstance, or are most slugs infected with this particular thing?
Well, Australia, they got a whole bunch of, like, very venomous, poisonous, you know, a lot of things down there can kill you.
Yeah.
They
Snakes
said the most people who contacted do not experience any symptoms. When they do, the symptoms.
Wait. Go back on the beginning of that sentence.
Most people who contracted do not experience any symptoms.
Who eats slugs?
The rat lungworm.
Okay.
So the danger is you don't know if the slug has this rat lungworm, and if it does, there's a chance you could get sick. Now, he got like the absolute worst case scenario of all of this.
Terrible.
You know, because he had no idea that this would be inside the slug.
Spring break madness.
Yes.
This is what happened.
And I think the lesson here is if somebody offers you to, you know, hey, eat this slug, you just say politely no, thank you.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Now, from that story, and this is very disturbing. We're going to take you down to...
The thing you just did was not
we're
disturbing?
Up the disturbing.
Compared to this, yes. Okay. Take you down to Braden River in western Florida. Is that where it's Friday?
Friday.
Well, this is Florida Woman and Florida Otter Friday.
Ooh.
Sue Spector, age 77, from Sarasota, was kayaking...
Not related to Phil Spector, we don't think.
We don't think, but we're not sure.
We don't know.
We're not sure. Could be a sister, yes. She and her husband were kayaking down the river with a guide kayak right next to them.
Okay.
When all of a sudden, they spied an otter swimming towards them.
Well, that's fun.
Sue said to herself, oh, this is a cute little otter coming over here. Then he leapt onto the kayak and lunged at Spector, attacking her. Then we had this
because
little...
Because he's angry about the shape of water.
Yes, I think he was.
He's angry about that movie.
I think
movie.
He had been seeing the fish man
That's
earlier
right.
and was
That's
upset.
Right.
cheating on him. We had this little tug of war. I tried to get him off of my kayak, and I screamed extremely so loudly so I could try and scare him off, but that didn't work. No,
because otters are don't care how much you scream at them. Otters scare
him. It took some time, but I fought with him. My husband jumped in. Other people came by to help. Then the kayak capsized. The couple were thrown into the water, half swimming, half flailing, and still the otter is attacking Sue.
Determined.
I took my paddle and tried to get him off of me.
Let's take that otter to the combine, see how he does.
He said he wouldn't let go. I kept screaming. I kept beating him with a paddle. When you're in the middle of it, you don't have a lot of thought except you hope you survive. Finally, Spectre and her husband climbed on their guide's kayak and began paddling as fast as they could. The otter followed us but didn't attack again.
Right.
Wow.
I think it was last seen taunting him and saying, you come into my yard.
That's right.
This is what's going to happen to you.
Well, that's bad.
Get a refund for the tour, you think?
I think,
is that refund worthy?
Next one's for free. Yeah, so there you go.
20% off the next kayak tour.
Let's get out of here. We will come back. We will have Old Guy Radio. We'll talk to Barry at this point about Korea and
heated toilet
coming
seat.
Back. And the most important.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, we need to talk about the meeting with Steve Sands. So, and because Liz loved that hotel. She loved that hotel. We have to see if Barry loved that hotel. We'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Spotify read. For those of you who want to know how to write good, effective ad copy, listen carefully to the Spotify read. Everyone knows Spotify is the place to go to stream the latest and greatest in music. But you can now also stream podcasts. It's easy. Open the app on your mobile device or desktop, click on the Browse channel, then click on the Podcast section. You can also stream on your smart speaker. They have all your favorites across news, entertainment, sports, and culture. Start streaming now.
Boom.
Boom.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. You might ask, why would we play a song like this? Well,
it's Old Guy Radio.
Yeah, it's Old Guy Radio. It's the Classics 4. Does anybody know the name of this song?
Not me.
Nigel, do you know the name of this song?
Yes, I do.
Tell the people the name of this song.
This song is called Stormy.
Yes, and that's why we're playing it.
Not Stormy Daniels, just Stormy.
No, just Stormy. We just thought, I have no critical commentary on this whatsoever. Other than that, it seemed like a good idea to play this song today.
Yes, this came off of their 1968 album, and this is a very curious title for an album, Mamas and Papas Soul Train, which I thought was sort of a strange title for them at that point. The B-side was 24 Hours of Loneliness. This is one of the biggest hits that the Classics 4 ever had. You wonder why they called the Classics 4? Because there were four members in the band, and someone of the managers said, oh yeah, we'll just call you the Classics 4.
I think the 4 was in Roman numerals, too.
Yes, it was.
And I think that was sort of a copy of the Beatles 6 album.
Yes.
That's my guess.
Yes.
All right, let me get to this. This is the Columbia Country Club Owl Update. And I'm going to read this to you because it's so wonderful.
We're getting an update?
Most of the time, this is what came in the mail the other day. Most of the time, when you belong to something and you just get notices about what the dinners are going to be or how dues are going up or, you know, how you could sabotage the Purple Line in some creative way or something like that. Listen to this. On the afternoon of Tuesday, March 6th, Owl Moon Raptor Center had completed 24 hours of observing and evaluating the young great-horned owls that had been transported from Columbia's golf course to the rehabilitation center on Monday morning. In a shorter-than-expected time frame, the two young owls demonstrated ideal feeding and digestive ability, and the specialist concluded that the owls were in excellent physical condition, despite having fallen nearly 80 feet during 65-mile-an-hour wind gusts last Friday. According to one of the rehab specialists, these young owls are structurally developed after hatching to physically withstand such falls from high nets. She said that the young owls basically floated down and bounced a few times upon impact with the ground. The specialist stated that it was an easy decision to bring the owls back to the white pine behind number 13 green that formerly held the nest and place them in an artificial nest that was to be secured to the tree. The Owl Moon Rescue Group brought their custom-made artificial nest, a dark-colored laundry basket with a dense base of branches and bark strips inside the basket to mimic a real nest. The group contracted a climber from a local tree service who selected the nest location to be where a strong horizontal limb came off the main trunk about 40 feet high. The climber screwed metal hooks into the trunk of the pine tree and secured the nest basket into the junction of the horizontal branch and trunk with cables tied tightly into the metal hooks. The young owls were then brought up and carefully placed in the net. Even though the young owls' first night in their new home brought a two-hour-long period of wet snow that coated the young owls and their nest basket, there was great news Wednesday morning. First, the top of the heads of both owls could be seen moving around from a vantage point by the rain shelter behind 13 Green. Secondly, one of the parent owls was finally spotted for the first time since we saw the two young owls on the ground. This great adult horned owl was perched high up in a tree to the left of number three fairway, clearly on watch duty. Lastly, the edge of the dark-colored nest basket had crystal-clear evidence that feeding from the parents was taking place. There is no mistaking the fresh, bright white-colored residue that is now present on the basket.
No mistake.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's very lovely.
It's wonderful.
Story.
These owls fell 60 feet, or whatever it was. 80 feet in 65 mile an hour. This is like, what? Don't you know when you see when there's an oil spill and they're picking up the little baby pelicans and they're drying them off, you feel good.
Yes.
This is a lovely story and shows you, I had no idea the care that would, I mean, I just figured half the time when you're walking up number 12 and there's a bunch of feathers around, it's because one of the hawks just ate a bird and that's it.
Right.
See ya. That's the cycle of nature.
Yes.
So this is lovely, is it not?
It's better than eating a slug or an otter attack.
I was surprised to learn that the owl parents will search for their young for up to 10 days.
Because
I was worried that as soon as you take them off property, as soon as you go off property, that family might be broken forever.
So
I was also surprised to hear that the
nice.
So isn't it? Can I ask a practical question?
Flies a little bit in the face of natural selection to affix their nest to the tree.
Isn't that nice?
It's kind of anti-Darwinist, if you ask me. But
I like it.
When can they fly?
When they're ready to fly. Okay, they're baby owls. They probably weren't.
Why do you have to put this pressure on them?
They're nesting.
Are they
now
achieving owls? Or what are our goals for these owls?
I'll research that.
I actually do think these are helicopter parents.
Yeah, this is like the
pressure that Bootsy gets at home from his grandfather every day. Is he crawling?
Here's all I do with Bootsy. I look at him in the eye and I go, ah! Which makes Bootsy
not scary
smile
at all.
That's the scariest thing I've seen.
Doesn't
today
he seem to laugh at that?
He laughs at you. He's starting young.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, Barry's here. Are you back on Eastern Time?
I am. It took a while.
What was that transition?
I would say
like?
So. I mean, you know, your day is night and your night is day, so you're trying to flip the entire thing. The funny. I don't know if Liz mentioned this. I still get a kick out of this, and that we left Seoul on a flight at 10:15 a.m. and on Monday. And landed at Dulles at 9:30 a.m. on Monday.
So you made 45 minutes.
How many hours later?
That's a good time.
How many hours later?
14 hours.
Wow.
So, I mean, that I'm kind of fascinated by that. It did take, I would say, 4 full days to flip back over.
Liz seemed to be delighted by her time in Korea, particularly in the small interpersonal relationships that she made. Somebody gave her a scarf, this, that, and the other thing. Were you as delighted?
Liz and I are different people. I don't take as many delights in these small interactions I have with people. I will say that we do agree that the South Korean people were extremely pleasant, and the volunteers were on point and helpful, and they took pride in wanting to speak to you in English. And you do. I feel terrible going to these places where I can't read. I can't speak. And you it's incumbent.
Why would anyone expect you?
No,
Korean.
No, they wouldn't, and they don't. But no. I feel it's terrible to go to somebody else's country and be like, "Well, cater to me," and that's what you end up doing, which I don't feel great about. But what's the alternative? Not learning Korean.
Did you have any like Liz had these moments? Well, because Liz is that
way of sitting
in coffee shops with her Google Translate button and making friends saving the world.
Yeah, I was just thank you. No, yeah.
Yeah.
It took me, I think, finally 2 or 3 days from the end, I learned the very long word for thank you in Korean, and I've since forgotten it. So
I'm sure that thank you is a universal term because I can see that you're.
I am my entire body is saying I appreciate what you're doing.
Did you get to Sansa's Hotel? Did you get to Sansa's Hotel?
I did not get to Sansa's Hotel. I heard
Liz loved it.
I know.
I thought she'd find it garish and awful, and she said no.
No, she said it was
beautiful.
We were in the office yesterday and going over some of this stuff, and she was thinking back longingly on her. The meal she had there. Sans and I texted a million times. I hate to say this about Steve's event, but speed skating was not relevant for me. So I never showed up at his venue, and he didn't make the effort to come see me.
Did you bring anything back that you particularly liked?
You know, I brought I really brought Olympic stuff. We went to Seoul the last day and went to a neighborhood and shopped, and you know, I could have gotten a kimchi pot. I don't need to eat kimchi for the next 5 years. Right, yeah, exactly. Right. And, you know, people did buy tea sets and all sorts of stuff. I didn't, you know, I brought my daughter a bunch of Olympic stuff.
When I was in Seoul, I brought back little satin jackets for Michael and Elizabeth with their names
you
on
still
them,
have
and
them?
Little rings.
No.
I have them.
Got it.
I have them. So although they don't have them, Wilbon bought about 15 suits.
I can. You know, yeah,
he bought
again,
a bunch of suits when he was there.
This exercise is always demonstrating the difference in Wilbon's life as a Washington Post columnist and my life.
Well, but I mean, that was before, you know.
He wasn't even Wilbon.
Right. He wasn't really Michael Wilbon yet, but he bought about.
But he played
suits.
The part well even before he was he Michael Wilbon.
Well, he was training for it.
Yes,
it is. I don't know if this is true for you, and maybe it is because you have to go on and continue your life and continue your work. The Olympics is a very distant memory to me already. I cannot name any person. I really cannot name any person. There was no star of the Olympics for me. How about for you?
Yeah, I can see that. And I think we talked about this when I was over there. While you're there and you're absorbed in it, you have zero idea of how America is consuming this television show, essentially. And it's particularly confusing when a lot of these things are happening in the middle of the night over here.
Yeah.
So to me, the seminal moment from an American perspective of these Olympics was the women's hockey team.
But there's no name that comes to mind.
No, and right. So I'm not even arguing that we should still be thinking about it. I'm saying that that's how fleeting it seemed to be. You know, I can't even
curling
remember
gold.
The goalies. Well, the curling gold was my most, you know, that was the most fun I had, weirdly, because it was the second to last day of the games and you're gassed and you're like, what am I doing? I'm going to sit here and watch curling and cover it seriously. That was fun. Am I going to mark that down as one of the five best things I've ever seen? Probably not. It's the Olympics are a strange, strange thing that I get completely absorbed in while I'm there. Feel detached with how the U.S. is consuming it. And the next two games are also in Asia. So we'll have the same.
So odd.
It is odd.
It's never happened before. They always move from continent to continent.
Well, I mean,
so odd.
What it
it's
reveals.
Money.
Well, but it also reveals that fewer and fewer cities want to host these things. It's an enormous undertaking. It's not good for the people during the games and then the lead up to the games. And then you end up with these venues. And even in South Korea, which was very, very efficient, there are three venues that had no, quote, legacy plan, which means they don't know how they're going to use them. They're going to be tumbleweeds.
When I went to Lillehammer, we stayed in housing that was very nice that afterwards actually became food for wild animals. It was...
Edible housing?
Yes.
Come on.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
That's fascinating.
Yes.
Well, why don't they keep doing that?
I don't know.
Well,
stayed essentially in a moose feeder.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what they told us, that it would degrade into food
that
for is
amazing.
Animals. I think they should do that all the time. I stayed in a rundown ski condo.
That's
with
what they did in Sochi,
dirt
right?
Bikes on the wall.
I don't know what they did in Sochi.
Sochi wasn't that.
No, 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 no. They did not do that.
All right.
Did you enjoy the local cuisine, kimchi and meldonium?
By the way, baby horned owls will leave the nest at 6 to 8 weeks old. Interestingly, that is before they can actually fly. But they,
well,
they
what do they do? They take a
leg muscles.
Yeah, what do they do?
Work their leg muscles. I guess they can withstand.
Well, obviously
the fall.
they're designed to be able to withstand the fall.
But shortly thereafter, they.
But
can
if they're on the ground, a fox could eat them.
Sure.
If they're on
or a lawnmower.
Yeah, yeah, that's not good. We didn't. The one thing that we haven't mentioned today, Tiger went one under yesterday. He's tied 10.
He's on course right now, too.
Yeah, he's a few holes in.
He's even par through his first two holes. He has a 5
But in the wind, on that course is very difficult.
So all you have to look at from yesterday's round was his play on the snake pit. And again, we're in Florida where everything is named on these final stretches.
Bear traps,
and if you saw what he did on 16 and
Golden
17,
Corral.
You saw a glimpse of a Tiger you have not seen in over a decade. So on 16, he's playing a shot from the trees. Most guys are pitching out. He's hitting a 30-yard hook over a hazard, and he gets it to an easy chip where he's essentially swinging against a tree, and he's using the branch as a way to swing through and turn the club over.
It was old school.
And on 17, he then comes back and hits a long iron shot, which is one of the hardest holes on the golf course. And there's an artistry to the play right now, and I don't want to sort of overstate that, but even in these last two starts, you're seeing something that these other guys don't do when they're playing their best. They manufacture birdies, and he just creates them.
This is the quote. I watched him say this. I'm pleased with every aspect of my game.
He doesn't say that lightly. Yeah.
So this makes me think that he can win again. This makes me think he can win again. Because, by the way, on the same day that he shot -1, Zach Johnson +2, Rory McIlroy +3, Jordan Spieth +5,
right.
Henrik Stenson +3.
And I mean, as somebody who's going to Florida for spring training next week, I can say that I scheduled my travel to align with
Bay Hill,
the final round of Bay Hill, because if he's in the mix, that's sorry, Nats, it's a better column.
Absolutely. So I mean, this is, and even the way Tiger presents himself in interviews is different than the last 5, 6, 8, 10 years.
No question.
There's no question, and it kind of, in hindsight, makes you appreciate or understand how vulnerable he felt at the time when he kind of says it in this cold way where I didn't know if I was going to play again. And he repeats the same line so often that you become dead to him. But when he says, I'm pleased with every facet of my game, that he just doesn't say that unless he means it. Yeah. And it means something.
We will take a break. We will come back with a jingle with some email. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Some teams just can't win to save their own lives. With no crack for their point guard to deal. Write them a check and they'll call you love.
Well, to some degree, that's true.
Still, they cannot beat UMBC.
Tremendous embarrassment. We couldn't even get into our own conference tournament.
Biley Court will save you. They can't play any day. Biley Court is just awful. Go away, go away.
Brad Weiss wrote that. I assume that's Kirsten.
That
singing.
Is Kirsten Unstad singing.
It is just so good.
Maybe there'll be some enchanted evening on Sunday. You'll get an at-large bid.
Yeah, we have no chance. We can't even get an at-large bid to the worst of the loser tournaments. Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday and Washington Post Neil Greenberg. Also like to thank sponsors today, Spotify, ZipRecruiter, and Squarespace. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Claire Natola, Kurt Unruh, one of the loyal littles from Fort Wayne, has a young child undergoing surgery. Please give a shout out to Kurt and his family for a speedy recovery, which of course we
do.
From J.P. Hassman, I'm a loyal listener from St. Louis and heard you talk about Billions on Showtime. Wanted to let you know why you should check it out. Not only does it have Damian Lewis from Homeland, but it also has Chevy Chase's own David Costabile, or Costabile, I guess, my cousin starring as Wags. I don't personally subscribe to Showtime, so I can't watch it, but I understand it's wonderful. David grew up in Chevy Chase, graduated from Gonzaga, and our family vacations in Rehoboth every year. Maybe we'll see you at Baywood this summer now that Old Landing is closed. I would like to know when the Rehoboth Avenue location of Chatter will be opening to go head-to-head with Grottos and the Green Turtle.
No, that's not happening.
I can't think of anything better than walking the sand and boardwalk in 105-degree weather in July and stepping into a Chatter to get my $12 T-shirt and piping hot cup of Wilbon's chili before stepping back out to dodge the dive-bombing seagulls going after people's Thrasher fries.
This is David Coastabile.
Just so you recognize him.
Oh, okay. Is that how it's pronounced, Coastabile?
I think it is, yeah. Okay. I think he went to Gonzaga.
From Bill Laheka.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Coho's New York, which is upstate. You mentioned that Wright State won the Horizon League at home in Detroit. Well, Grandpa's a graduate of the University of Dayton. It pleases me to correct you that Wright State University is actually located in Dayton, Ohio.
Really?
It's named after the Wright brothers who called Dayton their home. But you know, Dayton, Detroit, same difference.
No, same.
I apologize. I always thought Wright State was in Detroit.
You were wrong.
Did you know that?
I did not. I had no idea.
Wow. David Bozovich, Gilbert, Arizona. While a single Monopoly ticket from Washington is nice, I was wondering how 240,000 from Arizona sounds. Don't ask how or why, but I've happened upon the mother lode. See attached. I really want you to win the coveted free donut from the Safeway Bakery, so let me know where to ship these things. Chatter, the Palm, the Little House. 240,000. We have to have a winner in that.
Yeah, that sounds like criminal activity.
Yeah. From Hallie Alion, my fiance and I moved to D.C. from D.C. to Chicago a few months ago, but remain loyal littles. Listening to your recent reports from the D.C. Monopoly scene reminded me why we depend on you for inspiration and solidarity as far away as the Windy City. I've become uncomfortably fixated on the Monopoly game here. I have to visit the Junkie Jewel Osco instead of the Soviet Safeway for my fix. To the point that I'm posting on our apartment building's social forum to solicit Monopoly token trades and swaps. I've yet to hit the jackpot, also known as $25 in singles and fives. Now, I have a 20 and I have a 5. I did that. But I've been the thrilled finder of several instant winner tokens, resulting in a pantry stocked with tiny 8-ounce generic tomato paste and 3 packs of signature hot dog buns. I'm a vegetarian and my fiance only eats hot dogs when there's no other meat available, including Spam. I'll wrap up here in the hopes brevity being the soul of wit will land me some airtime on your revered show. But I'd be remiss if I didn't slip in a pleading invitation to our wedding in D.C. in June. I can promise you a seat next to my father, a distinguished ball man, a few words who also goes by Tony, and hot dog buns slathered in tomato paste. From Nate in D.C., dear Uncle Tony, I know why you were unable to hit the C button on your clicker to get sports. Your fingers don't type anymore, and P.S. your show still stinks. From Elliot Olshansky in Commack, New York, my condolences to Howard Fineman on Colgate's loss to Bucknell, but I can't help but wonder if 3DP is being a little too modest when he describes his new job as coming back to Earth. After all, being the intergalactic editor of HuffPost, but there's only one way to move up, a job at NBC Universal. By the way, Howard mentioned Colgate being more of a hockey school, but he didn't mention that the team's former home at Star Rink was a filming location for Slapshot.
Oh, wow.
I attended a game there 11 years ago and even bowled at the 4-lane bowling alley down the hall from the rink. The bowling alley is no longer there. That's okay. They didn't serve fries. Best regards from Suffolk County.
Very nice.
From Ann Virgos Blair, she writes, thank you so much. Oh, thank you so much for mentioning our family restaurant, The Rendezvous, yesterday. I did that on PTI. Yeah. I believe it has the best ribs in the United States. I love The Rendezvous. So nice. We'd love to send you some ribs. Tell us where to send them. Oh, yes.
Send us a big box of that.
And by the way,
I'll be there in a couple weeks.
By the way, from Royal Little and Amtrak executive Nick Genovese, he says I can get in. He doesn't send the card, but he says I can get into Club Acela. How am I just supposed to do that? I don't have a card.
Send the card.
What do I do? Have an account number.
I don't know what it is.
Just say representative.
Representative. You're out on your bike tonight, everyone. As always, do wear white.
You know what ought to happen to them? They ought to be stabbed by cocktail forks.
Thanks, everybody.
Oh, my. Get going downtown. I don't want to see you there. I don't want to hold your hand through another place there. Figure it out. There's too many of you here. Cripple it. Hold my fears of another sure night. We'll be right back.
to come true.